and welcome back to this episode of the Mama Made Podcast. I'm your host, Sophie Barron, and today I'm joined by Africa Daily Clark. You might know her on Instagram as the Vitamin D Project. We had the most amazing conversation. I was literally so emotional after we hung up. You'll see why, but just hearing about how she respects her children, how she puts in place and enforces boundaries both with them and with other family members, with friends. It was so enlightening, and honestly, this is one I'm going to keep coming back to again. Just a quick note on the audio, it's not the usual quality we would expect, and for that, I can only apologize, but also reassure you that it's a fantastic episode, so please, please stick with it, and as always, let us know what you think. Thank you so much again for taking the time to speak with us today. It felt really right to bring you on to discuss this topic. I've definitely learned a lot from your platform over the last few years. So I'll just jump right into it. Your content is so rich across Instagram and Patreon. Your platform isn't just about your family. It's about so much more. But you do share some snippets about your family life. And I think what comes across overwhelmingly clear way is the respect that you have for your children, for their privacy, for one thing, but also for their well-being as individuals. There are very clear boundaries and as empathy for them as real people experiencing the world. So I wanted to talk about that in the context of mealtime and feeding, because there's a lot of expectation in how we expect children to eat and how we want them to eat. And it can cause a lot of anxiety for children, but also for parents. I'm getting ahead of myself. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and your family and the work that you do?
Absolutely. So I'm Africa. I run a lifestyle platform, you could call it, called the Vitamin D Project. I also have Patreon, as you said, where we kind of delve deeper, basically, on the subjects that I touch on Instagram. It's really important for me as a Black family from the UK to have a physical presence. But as you say, as my account has grown, the privacy aspect has to be at the forefront. So there's less of my children shown, but we absolutely still try to share any applicable lessons that we're learning as we go as parents. And so that's still a constant theme that runs through.
I guess before you became a mother, before you embarked on this journey of parenthood, did you have any thoughts about it? Was it something that you sort of had pictured in your head of what it might be like? And then what was the reality like? What was that transition like for you?
I feel like there were two different stages. Before children were on the agenda, let's say before I met my husband, I just thought I was going to be amazing, Sophie. I had it in my head. I was going to be this Mary Poppins mom. And, you know, I had a few friends earmarked whose mums I thought were wonderful. And I knew I was going to be exactly like them. And then I think as it got closer, as we were trying, as we were planning for a family, I realized that those people's lives were so different to mine, that with all the will in the world, I could not implement those parenting styles. And my husband and I are very different, but so similar with our parenting values. So before my eldest was conceived, there were just so many rich conversations about the styles of parenting that we liked, what we didn't like. We never pigeonholed ourselves into one particular category, but it just gave us a lot to research on, basically. And as I'm sure you know, it doesn't matter how much research you do, by the time baby's here and as they get older, that style will evolve and change as well. So it's definitely changed a lot. But it's really nice to have always put thought into it, even if we didn't end up practicing the things that we discussed.
I really love that. I think that's something that's so important to recognize, is that sort of mindfulness that you've put into parenting. As you say, it can evolve, it can change. You don't need to make a decision and that's it. That's the kind of car that you're driving in. But yeah, what were the values, I suppose, that you thought about when before becoming a mom? You know, what sort of parent did you and your partner think about being? What was that goal that you had in mind?
I think we'd got to the stage in adulthood where we knew our thoughts were still going to change as adults, but we knew how much easier it would have been with, how do I say this tactfully? We kind of knew the barriers in place for us to get to the adults that we are, and we kind of discussed how much more fulfilling or easier it would have been as young adults, children, to have had those barriers removed and been encouraged to do the things that we love to do. I never talk about my husband's childhood, but he had a fantastic childhood, fantastic relationship with his mum. And he was always encouraged to do the things that he wanted to do from a young age. Let's say art, for example, his mum absolutely pushed that right up until university. And we can see the benefits, even though he's so far removed from the art world and wasn't able to do that as a career. I can see the love of a parent saying, I'm going to let you do this for as long as possible. And I'm no artist, but I'm going to absolutely create an environment for you where you can thrive in this particular field. And she has more than one son, and she's done that for each of her children. I can see the benefits in how her children are just so confident in those aspects. And that was something that I really wanted to take from her. You know, money plays a big part in it. I don't think you need riches at all, but I completely understand that a lack of money impacted what my parents were allowed to let explore. And so we wanted to parent in a way that income wasn't a factor. We knew, and we still know, that our income will change, and it may change dramatically. And so we wanted to create home environments that didn't necessarily rely on expensive clubs or, you know, habits and hobbies that we couldn't maintain at certain points of the year, because we didn't get to do that. My dad was wonderful. If we wanted to learn drums, we'd learn drums. But the second he couldn't afford it, we had to quit. And so that desire was there, but it wasn't in a thoughtful way, through no malice of his own. You know, now what we would do is invest in a secondhand drum kit, for example, and make sure that my daughter can do it from home, and maybe buy an app so that whatever happens to our finances, she can continue to do that. But I've seen on the flip side, with all the best will in the world, how a change in your scenario can really impact your kids. So for my husband and I, the biggest thing that kind of like overrides everything is how we can provide a consistent base for our children, and how all the things that will change without fail in our lives don't impact them in a negative way. Consistency is so important to us. So we try where we can to provide everything at home that we would like to also have reflected in their schooling, for example. And that's been really, really rewarding. It's definitely paid off. And I think it's something that more and more parents have had to consider the pandemic, when, let's say, even if you do have a stable income, you don't have access to the things that you've promised your child, or have become such a strong routine for your child. And so what do? You know? Yeah, I'm waffling. Sorry, Sophie.
No, not at all. And I was really thinking that I remember when the pandemic first started and having that feeling of like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my child now? And not having taken that step that you did to say, I'm going to take this active role to create a baseline. So no matter what changes, I've created an environment where my child can play happily and creatively and be happy with what they've got, really. And that was a huge unlearning, I think, for me during the pandemic as a parent, was sort of like how to do things differently, how to really just hone in on what they need as children, which is love, which is encouragement, which is a space to be creative. I think it's just amazing to hear that was something that I've always watched sort of in awe of your stories of how that's something that's been a thread that's carried through with your family. So I suppose on that note, I think a lot of parents go into parenting, as you say, picturing this kind of Mary Poppins world where there is a perfect parent. Do you feel like you ever had an idea of what perfect parenting is? Do you believe in perfect parenting? I know that's sort of a leading question, but there are such a thing.
I don't know. I definitely say there's not such a thing, because each child is different. And so what they require from you is different. You know, my three children already, they're 2 years apart, all of them, and they are very different. They need very different things. And that's hard when you're trying to be consistent as well, because you have to shape shift for each child to get the best out. But I guess the parents that I was drawn to in my childhood, the ideologies I loved, were parents who were cheerleaders for their children, their biggest fan almost, very invested in whatever their children did. I find it hard to see how that isn't the easiest way to be, you know? Of course, parents want to put the first piece of artwork up, and of course they think it's a Picasso. That, to me, that's the logical thing. But I think life pulls us in so many ways that as adults, we prioritize our own lives before our children's. And I think it's important to find a middle ground where simultaneously you acknowledge and appreciate that right now your 6-year-old, your 4-year-old, your 2-year-old, it is the most important time in their life for them. And they will never get that back. And I've said it before, but you know, my eldest two for sure are the ages that I remember being. And I thought it was my show. I thought it was all about me. And so I have to honor that for my children as well. Anything that we're doing now is for my husband and I, is for a legacy. It's not for current accolades for us. It's for stability for our children, to create a legacy and to support them in what they're doing, because we've got to the ages that we are with support from our loved ones and family. And now we're just coasting. You know, we are literally just trying to work on foundations for our children. So I think it's that middle ground. It's not, oh, I'll do anything for my kids, my life doesn't matter anymore. But finding that middle ground so that you can both coexist as the heroes of a story.
I love that. I'm actually feeling quite emotional listening to you, because I mean, I can only speak to my own experience of having my first and needing, I really struggled to bond with her, to be honest. And I was that parent who wasn't responsive in that way. And I actually went to therapy to deal with what I was struggling with as a new parent, and having the therapist just say, well, all you have to do as a parent is respond to her emotional needs. And like that sentence has now kind of stuck with me. She's four now, and it's made raising, you know, my son, who's now one, much easier in a way, because it is that simple. I was really overcomplicating it. I was sort of like, well, no, it matters what I dress her in. It matters what she's eating. It matters how I'm feeding her. It matters when I'm feeding her. And realizing that actually just comes down to, as you say, and have had the intuition to understand it, it does come down to sort of responding to their emotional needs, and you've said it just so beautifully. So would you say that you ascribe, I mean, it doesn't sound like necessarily you ascribe to any particular parenting school, but would you say that you kind of sit more in the school of gentle parenting then?
We really do try not to pigeonhole ourselves. I love a lot of aspects of gentle parenting. I find some of it quite eye roll. And I also think sometimes we ignore culturally who gets to do those sorts of parenting. That's been a massive block for me. We really love the Montessori approach. My eldest went to a Montessori nursery for the first 18 months of her life. We were very fortunate that it was a nursery that cost the same as any other nursery, and it was on our doorstep practically, and I had to go back to work full time, so it was great to have that option. It was in central London, extremely diverse, and we loved that. And we also do love a lot of aspects of gentle parenting. I think what a lot of people ignore is that these are traditionally very white spaces, and that there is a lot of privilege in being able to say, hey, I'm going to do this with my child, and I'm going to ignore society, and I'm going to create this lovely bubble. And, you know, people look on at that to white middle-class people and see that as aspirational. But if you try to be a black parent within these spaces, or just any kind of online space, instilling these values, there is so much harsh criticism. If you let it, it could really, you know, you could allow that to change, or you might have thought of this way of parenting your entire life with babies here, and now it could be very easy to give into those voices. I think a lot of people have so much, and I hear it verbally, so much distaste at the fact that we are raising children to be as confident as I am as an adult, when a lot of people take offense at my confidence as an adult. You know, I'm instilling that in my 6-year-old, my 4-year-old, my 2-year-old. I more than understand if I'm dealing with pushback now as an adult. It's also quite a dangerous thing that we're setting up for them, but we're looking at the bigger picture, and the world is evolving. I don't necessarily think it's going to get easier for them as black children, as black adults. And so everything that we do has to be very conscious and very intentional. You know, I think when you think about gentle parenting and Montessori approach, there's this whimsical idea of minimalism, and when you're, if you have clear wealth, you can decide to withhold things from your children, and it's no negative thing. But if there's no wealth attached, if you're not from a particular socioeconomic background, that can be seen as controlling. So for example, who is she to say she only wants books for her children's birthday? But we don't know financially where we're going to be next year. And we're in a 2-bedroom flat, or, you know, with my eldest two, we were in a 1-bedroom flat for 18 months. I cannot accept gifts out of season, out of cycle. I can't open my doors to things that are going to negatively impact how we live, because we do not have the space. We don't want to be parents who are arguing over things that we can't control. And so we're saying from day one, when we had my baby shower for my eldest daughter, we'd only like books, please. You know, a library is such an important founding part of childhood that we can't actually afford to do ourselves. So please help us. We would really appreciate if you could help us along the way. And now that's something that this has helped to create the foundations for the strong children that we've got. And we appreciate that the people in our lives can honour that. And the very simple request, you know, a 6 to 10 pound is going to be of such value to my child. And for anyone who takes offense and says, you know, how dare you not accept this? How dare you not accept that? It's actually quite a loving boundary to have in place. But I do think it's really important to touch on the fact that it only seems to be the elite who are allowed to do that without criticism, basically.
I think you've said it all so beautifully. I'd love to take what you've just sort of explained and apply that now as a lens to mealtime.
Yeah.
And to understand really your experience introducing solids to your children and how, you know, particularly with your first, when it was your first time sort of on this feeding journey, and then how it might have evolved with your second and then your third.
So the biggest thing for us, again, another really conscious decision was that we decided our children were going to be and dairy free. At the time, my husband and I had done like a 6-month stint at being vegan, and we knew that we never wanted our children to be vegan, but we wanted something that was attainable enough to maintain throughout their childhood and early adulthood. We didn't think that veganism was. Veganism for us was more a thing to reset our health. We spiraled at overweight in a very short space of time, you know, that loved up period, you just really do. And we just needed to get our health reset, kind of like a detox. So that was really, really good for us. We saw the health benefits, and then we wanted something attainable that we could continue. So we decided that our children being pescatarian and dairy-free was the way to go. We also didn't trust the meat that would be on offer throughout their childhood in schools. And, you know, even at other people's houses, we knew that we couldn't afford to buy the best meat. And we couldn't afford to buy organic. We couldn't afford to buy meat where it had come from. So again, with the same kind of thought process of making sure that we could parent in a consistent way, regardless of our income, we knew that we could always create healthy, nutritious, delicious meals if we did it pescatarian and dairy-free. As my eldest got older, dairy-free became less attainable. So, you know, she's had plant-based milk all her life. But for example, we don't forgo certain foods with dairy products in them. It made it really easy with weaning, to be honest, because essentially there was nothing that we were eating, because we also have a very pescatarian heavy diet. We meet once a week with our like joint family meal, my extended siblings. But it was very easy for us to translate the meals that we had with my daughter when she was kind of like 6 months or so onwards. And I think that really gave her a good grounding now as she's six, that there's not much she won't try. She knows that she has to try absolutely everything. And she also appreciates that what she didn't like last week, she may like this week. Weaning was a really special time. As I said, we were in a tiny flat, but we always have prioritized her to have her own eating area. We couldn't have a table in our first home. So it's so familiar to mum and dad, but we have always made sure that it was a structured environment for her.
I mean, this is brilliant, Africa. I'm like emotional. I'm like thinking about all the different ways I can change my practices as a mom. I just feel like what comes across so clearly are your values are just so strong, and your vision for your family is so strong. And yeah, of course, the boundaries that you set, and you, as you say, it all ties into these values.
It is such an important time. With my eldest, she was at a nursery from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. And potentially she could have had 3 meals there, but it was still so important for us to have that time together. You know, as I said, I was sitting on the sofa and her in her high chair with her table. And then as she got older, she had her own little IKEA table that was her crafting table as well. But just to prioritize this time as kind of like a ritual. And it's something we have always done, regardless of our working shifts. There will always be one parent who used to do shift work. There'll always be one parent sat on the table. Within the second we moved to a two-bedroom, a table was one of the most wonderful things that we could get, because we could finally all sit around. And I think it's important to, you said something earlier about respecting our children's attitudes to meal times. My kids are all so different. My middle child will start a meal and then she wants to leave the table. She wants to explore. She wants to do her own thing. And you know, other people are horrified when they come around and watch this, by the way, but she wants to explore and then she wants to come back and finish her meal in peace when she's ready. She doesn't even want it warmed up. That is just her way of doing things. We recently went to my grandma's, their great grandma's, and you know, she was she's got to eat it now when it's hot, she should be eating when everyone else eats. I don't want any negative practices to creep into something as emotional and evocative as eating when they're at an age where they're forming really deep bonds with food. You know, it's so interlinked. These things that might manifest in early teens don't just happen like that. They start with these relationships that we allow to happen now. And my husband and I's approach is that we want our kids to be full, and that's it. Sometimes that means, doing slightly different versions of a meal for our children. We're not chefs. My husband is actually very good at cooking, but I am certainly no chef. I actually find it extremely stressful to be in the kitchen, but I'm happy for one child that doesn't like pesto and the other child that doesn't like tomato sauce. And I'm happy to switch out things like that if it means that we can sit together as a family and everybody will enjoy what's on their plate and leave full. I have another daughter who will ask for seconds and then thirds and then fourths to the point where we'll explode. I also have to remember that one of the reasons why we chose Montessori all those years ago was that I had a lot of things to unpack with food as an adult. Culturally, it was seen as rude as children to accept people's offers of sweets. There's this thing, maybe not for everybody, but certainly in my Caribbean, where it's seen as a reflection that maybe your parents didn't feed you, for example. So it's like, oh, if you go to someone's house and they offer you something, the polite thing is to say, no, thank you. I don't want it to look like I didn't feed you. Of course we were getting fed at home. And so there's this really difficult thing as an adult. I found in my early adulthood, I'd binge on a lot of foods that I couldn't have as a child. Not foods that were withheld, just treats that were really expensive. My husband also does the same. And we have very different backgrounds, but we're both from, well, I'm from the West Indies, he's from the Caribbean. We have very different upbringings, but that was a common thread. The second that we could do food shops together, it was very overindulgent, all the cereals we never got to have as a child, and you know, the silly things. And so we needed to make sure that our children didn't have those things, because you can pass them on without thinking, can't you? Whereas the Montessori approach, what I loved was that, you know, in this particular setting, snacks were put out throughout the day constantly, and children would help themselves, so that you learn if you, overindulge in orange slices on day one, you don't need to do it the next day. I thought, what a wonderful way for a child from an early age to understand that this food does this to your belly and gives you this much energy, etc., etc. I don't think that, within reason, I don't think that we should be restrictive with food portions. I think we should allow the child to lead that. And so that was a really important, wisdom that we try to then bring home, and we definitely do that with our children now.
I love that, and that's exactly what I suggest to parents, especially when they say, oh, like, my baby's fussy or they're this, and I just say, you know, are you imposing the rules? I know a lot of parents say the same, and I know I feel that I had a lot of unlearning to do around food rules, around, you know, I grew up in an environment where you had to finish your plate. You have to finish your plate. There's, you know, before you get the dessert, or even just in general, you can't leave any food, because that's a sign of rudeness, not to finish what's on your plate. And growing up, I've lost what it feels like to actually feel full or hungry, because there's just, you've got a plate in front of you and you finish what's on it. And so we do the same in my house, is we give everything all at once. I don't care, you know, if my daughter has a cookie with her dinner, I don't care if she has a huge ice cream before dinner, she's learning her own limits. And that's something that can feel very unnatural. But as you say, it's important and amazing to see it in practice when they realize, okay, I can't actually have that much ice cream because my tummy is really going to hurt me. and I think that does come back, I guess, to, there's a lot of pressure often put, I think, on well-meaning or not very well-meaning GPs or health visitors or even in-laws. We definitely get a lot of stories around that, of kind of like, this is how you should feed your family, or this is what it should be. You know, your daughter must sit for the whole meal. You must start with carrot. You mustn't do this. So is that something that you've experienced? And then how do you manage kind of and suggest to people listening to set those boundaries with the people that are outside of your family unit?
So we do one meal time a week with the extended family. We call it Sibling Sunday. All of my brothers and sisters, there's a lot of us, and our children, we eat together, but it's very informal. So there's never any pressure on that. But I did find, we did a family holiday a couple of years back, And because it was that, you know, Monday to Sunday, every single night you're eating a meal together, I did really feel almost like a pressure of other family members with similar age children, how different our meal times were. We're all eating at the same time, but we have different things in place. And as free as it sounds like we parent with food, we also do need to instill boundaries. So one strong boundary for us is that we dish out for the children first, and then mum and dad dish out themselves. We all sit to eat together, and you can have as much as you want, but we're not going to give you any more food or dish out while we're eating. We're not going to get up and get something else for you. And you know, we always say mum and dad are eating their food as well now. I know that you finish. You can have anything you want, but you must wait until we finish. And I think that's because there is a lot of anxiety around constantly trying to please your children during their meal time. And it's also important for them to realize my daughter can get up, she can do anything she wants, but that doesn't mean that we have to. And we still have to enjoy our food in the way that we would like to. And that's in one sitting, for example. And I remember my sister-in-law just being so anxious that, you know, she also had three young children. One of them now wants this, one of them now wants that. And I almost said to her, why don't you try doing what we do? But it was so clear that, you know, we can show what we're doing, but I never want to be that person who is, who's even given advice on how another family should eat. It's such a personal thing, isn't it? And we're quite fortunate that we just don't really care what a lot of people think in any way. And so, you know, other people's opinions, like I said, my great grandma, who I obviously very deeply respect, was horrified that my daughter was allowed to get up and go around. And, you know, I just said, Grandma, my grandma is wonderful. I just said to her, this is the way that she eats. And she's going to surprise you. She's going to finish what she wants to finish. She's got a great appetite, but this is the way that she eats. And we're lucky we've got a really respectful family. So, of course, people have their input and their opinions, but we cannot allow that to steer us off course when we have put when we've put so much thought in parent.
And then I suppose, do you have any advice for people who do still feel that kind of tug of people pleasing, which so many women of our generation, I think we were raised to sort of, we were socialized to be people pleasers. And so I think it's still relatively common, I would think, to feel like you're doing things wrong, or you feel guilty you're not doing things right. Do you have any advice for parents who worry about this?
I think you just have to prioritize who you want to please, because it's not possible to please everyone. And your children can be on that list. Yourself can be on that list. Your partner can be on that list. And if, let's say, the three of you are the top people, you can be at peace to know that actually I've managed to please three people today, my partner, myself, and my child. I can't please everyone. And these are three very important people that I wanted to tick off my list. And I've done that. Amazing. What would be the benefit of pleasing somebody sat next to you in a restaurant that you'll never see again, who may not enjoy your practice of, for example, your child eating with a screen? That's a topical one. I'm neither here nor there on that. What would be the point in trying to please that stranger on that day and everybody on your table who you live with and love not being pleased? You know, you do have to weigh it up. But I think it would be remiss of me to say, don't care what anyone says. We're just lucky that we've got to that stage in our life. But I don't think that is, comes naturally to everyone. And so if you want to people please, just prioritize who it is that you want to please.
I love that. Have that list and then tick it off. And that's all that really matters. Have you ever had to navigate periods of, I guess, fussiness or struggles at mealtime, particularly with your older children, but even with your baby?
So my baby is quite easygoing, I think, because he is watching two older children that he wants to be like, and they enjoy food. So that's been really lovely. But for my eldest two, you know, there's some things that they feel very strongly about. They don't mind vegetables, but they really don't like anything. Let's say spinach, how it looks when it's cooked, when it like runs through something. They hate things like that. Oh my goodness. And so I can, of course, I can blend it up and I can make sure they don't see it. But how does that help them when they're at school? I don't really want to deceive them into eating something. I want to encourage them to try different things. And so we have this thing where we say, oh, I know, I appreciate that you told me that you didn't like this. We're going to try it again today in a different way. and please try it again. And we just start from scratch. And if you don't like it, don't eat it. That part is absolutely fine. I even help you pick it out. But it's important for them to know that just because they said they didn't like something one day, it doesn't mean that we're completely writing off the menu, especially when their sibling might love it, for example, or dad might love it, or I might love it. And I think that helps everyone to feel respected and understood. And of course, kids being kids, sometimes they do love it the next time as well.
Yeah, of course. There's always that sort of, I mean, I think I tell this story all the time, but yeah, my daughter would do the same with mushrooms, pick them out of everything. Like, I hate mushrooms. And the next day, I love mushrooms. Yeah. Without, you know, no bites in between. Just So I guess respect, those are their wants. And that's what their body's telling them they want. And then they get used to it or they don't get used to it and they just get interested. That's really great. I guess, how do you, you've mentioned a bit, I guess, about not being too fussed about creating different meals for your children, not completely different meals, but obviously catering to their different desires or needs. But how in general would you say you manage with three children the load of three meals a day plus snacks? It just seems like mind-boggling how much you accomplish in a day plus having three children to take care of.
It's so overwhelming. I just, you know, I know every parent is going through it, whether that's mom, dad, whatever the caregivers are. I know that everybody's doing it and probably doing it a whole lot better than me. I literally do have a meltdown in the kitchen. I think it's partly to do with ADHD. A recipe just sends me way over the edge. You know, even just simple steps of not following a recipe but trying to get something made, I make it so much of a bigger thing than it is. And so I have two fail-safe meals that the kids enjoy that I can do well. And you know, the kids know that if dad's not home yet, we're going to have one of these two things, or just fish fingers, because that's an easy go-to, pasta pesto. But I don't put the pressure on myself to ever create gourmet meals. If we're in a position to, I never feel guilty that it might be a takeaway. I let the kids know this is a treat, how special that we can do this. But I think it's important for children to also understand why they're eating what they're eating. My daughter said to me, she said to me last week, what did she say? She said, we shouldn't say this word. It's a bad word, isn't it? I said, what made you say that? And she said, do you remember when you cooked me dinner and I said this word and you got so upset? And I realized how much it stayed with her. It wasn't a bad word, but she had basically said that she didn't want to eat my food. And my visible appearance had led to her associating that feedback with a bad word. And I don't want that to ever happen, you know? I really don't want that to ever happen. Of course, you want kind, considerate kids. But I don't want them to feel anxious to share their feelings. And so that was a learning curve for me. I do try and explain to them, you know, when dad cooks, like how wonderful we can eat all these amazing different foods with all these ingredients. If it's a takeaway, somebody else is making food for us, we're so lucky, like how fortunate that we can do this evening. And when it's just the basic food that I'm adept at doing, the kids are aware of that as well. And I think it's important to involve them in those steps as well.
Yeah, of course. And so what would you advise, I guess, for parents who maybe you're just having a bad day? I mean, we all have days where you just sort of don't want to parent. I mean, maybe I'm making an assumption here. I know I have days where I just don't necessarily want to parent, or I just don't feel like putting the work in. I'm tired, I'm overworked, I'm cranky, whatever it might be. Or, you know, there's also the cases where maybe more gentle techniques don't seem to work.
Yeah.
You do feel like you just need to resort to being stern or strict. What do you advise for parents in those situations?
I think it's important to always have something in your arsenal to help you prepare for those moments. A backup. We love Mama Made because it's in the freezer and they're not guilty meals at all. It doesn't feel like a compromise into what I would love for them to eat and what they're eating. And even though these things can often feel like, oh, it's a big outlay, when I know what it's going to cost for a takeaway, even for a kid's portion, it's really easy for us to factor that into our monthly shop instead. And so I like to have things in my arsenal where if things aren't going right, even if I'm mid-meal, if it's all going chaotic and the cheese sauce has come wrong and I've burnt the base and all of that, I like to know that I have a backup in my freezer. That's really helpful to me. You know, I might be waiting on my husband to get back with food shopping and things like that. Sometimes it's just too chaotic And so I think if you apply that not just mealtime but to anything, to have things in your arsenal where you will not feel guilty when you fall back on those things. Because a lot of us, even if we have partners and wider family, we are parenting alone day to day, and it can be extremely overwhelming. Parenting is probably not the only thing we're doing that day. And it's important to give ourselves grace for that as well. So I always recommend having something in your arsenal that you can fall back on if things aren't going right.
I mean, I could literally listen to you talk all day, Africa. I just love hearing how, again, you set your visions for your family. You are completely dedicated to the values and you live your life accordingly with those boundaries in place. So I just want to thank you so much again for taking time out of your day to come speak with us. I just can hear already how this episode is going to be one that people want to save down and refer to again and again. I already want to like rewind and go back to some parts and about what you said about sort of values and respecting your children. So thank you. I know you've got a lot on and it really means a lot. And yeah, very excited to be able to share your words of wisdom with our audience. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sophie. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys so much for sticking with that episode and for giving it a listen. Thank you so much also to Africa Daily Clark for joining us to share her story and her approach. That's it for this episode of the Mom Made Podcast. We'll be back soon with even more episodes and more familiar faces. So yeah, be sure to follow along at Hello Mama Maids for all news relating to this. And you can give me a follow at Sophie M. Barron or learn more about Africa and her journey at the Vitamin D Project. We're always here for you throughout this journey. So send us your messages, your comments, your questions, everything. We love to hear it.